720 WGN. It's Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, here on a Saturday afternoon in Chicago. Deep breaths, everyone. I think we're now a few days relaxed from Monday's insanity for a lot of people trying to drive to the airport. And we had the protesters. We've been talking about it all week on WGN about how the city should handle, or maybe should have better handled and should handle in the future if this stuff happens, which undoubtedly it will. In fact, there's a protest today by the same organization happening on Michigan Avenue, not quite the expressway, but this is going to be an ongoing issue. But I saw an article pop up on Reuters from Jenna Green, who is their legal columnist, one of their legal columnists, and it had to do with about, can a driver sue a protester for any number of things? And I thought, we got to get Jenna Green on the show. She came on a couple years ago. She's here again. Jenna, happy Saturday. Thanks for giving us some of your time today.
Oh, gosh. Thanks, John.
I know this wasn't a Chicago-only thing. This happened out by where you are, too, right?
Yes, it did. Protesters shut down the Golden Gate Bridge for several hours. All traffic was stopped, as well as Interstate 880 in Oakland. So it was a major disruption in the San Francisco Bay Area.
For sure. And I should say, while we are moving forward with this conversation, we are having a legal discussion about this avenue going forward. I think it goes without saying, Jenna and I are not saying anything about the actual protests and what they're all about. We're not offering opinions on that sort of thing. But Jenna, I imagine that got your wheels turning about the idea when you saw all the complaints that drivers were having about whether there's a legal claim here.
Yeah, exactly. And also thank you for sort of underscoring that this isn't about, you know, what U.S. policy toward Israel should be. It's about the questions that could come when anyone, for really whatever reason, might completely block a major roadway. So in this instance, what caught my attention is that a lawyer told me that he is putting together a class action lawsuit that will name both individual protesters and organizers for blocking roads.
In a class action lawsuit, so is this lawyer in the process right now of compiling complaints from people in just your area or all over the country?
What my understanding is that the lawyer, his name is Ted Frank, is looking for people who were caught up in demonstrations earlier this year in the Washington, D.C. area. And they also put out a call on X for people in Chicago who were impacted by road shutdowns.
Wow. Okay. What are the, I mean, like, I think for a lot of, probably I'd say the vast majority of drivers, although they were going to the airport, you know, it's a major inconvenience, but it's something they eventually brush off. But I guess there really are some serious implications for people who were stuck behind some of these protests. At least that's how this lawyer probably sees it.
Certainly there can be serious implications, especially if emergency vehicles, for example, can't get through, or just True. The disruption for people's lives who, you know, they might, you know, people I heard from who, you know, had surgery scheduled that they've been waiting 3 months for, and now they've got to wait 2 more months to get in, or wow. Missed a day of work, or just how miserable it is to be caught in traffic for 4 hours if you need to go to the bathroom. And so what the lawyer is looking at is a lawsuit that would be on behalf of people stuck in traffic that would have two counts. It would be public nuisance, which is the idea of conduct that unreasonably interferes with the rights of the public. So that could be like loud and annoying noises or bright lights or a foul smell. But he thinks being stuck in traffic would also apply. And then the other cause would be false imprisonment, which is people literally Oh. stuck in their cars.
Wow.
And that's the idea that you know, someone intentionally restricts another person's movement without legal authority.
We should just make this plain and clear that criminal action would be taken by police, and that would be the case. This is about civil action after the fact, right?
Exactly, yeah. So they would be looking to get monetary damages, and they could come in three forms, both nominal damages, which is like a sort of token award, like, hey, you won, and then actual damages, which would be like a person's out-of-pocket cost, like maybe they missed their flight. And then also he's talking about punitive damages, which he would argue that the conduct was intentional, that the people knew what they were doing would harm other people, and they did it anyway. Hmm. And then The other thing he's looking for is what they call injunctive relief, where a judge would order participants not to do this anymore. And if they did, then they would be in criminal contempt, which would be even more serious.
Obviously, for the people that were impacted by this, and, you know, I didn't even think about, like, missed surgery, stuff like that. I did see a story of someone who was looking for a job interview. They were trying to get back on their feet, and they missed their job interview, and they lost out on a job. Like, those things actually have real ramifications. And this lawsuit could aim to maybe, you know, it's not a perfect society. The way we get damages from people in civil court is through money, and that's the way it works. But that idea of also telling them they can't do this anymore, is part of this to try and maybe send a message to future protesters that, hey, people aren't going to take this anymore?
Yeah, no, that's a large part of it. That's the lawyer says he wants it to be a deterrent, and part of his feeling is that that the civil or the criminal penalties are just not that strong. Like, for example, in November, 78 protesters shut down the Bay Bridge, which is the bridge that links San Francisco and Oakland, and it was shut down for 4 hours. And the protesters' punishment for that was they got 5 hours of community service, and then they'll need to pay some kind of restitution that hasn't been set yet, but it seems like the total for all 78 would be no more than $4,400, which would be maybe $50 apiece.
$50 and 5 hours of community service for shutting down a major artery. Yeah, it doesn't seem like those scales are as balanced. Certainly this lawyer would say that. Now, mm-hmm. We are running now into the crux of this, which is being held liable for peaceful protests. And again, we could debate whether you consider shutting down a freeway peaceful or not. But generally speaking, this kind of runs into the First Amendment a little bit, doesn't it, Jenna?
I mean, that's certainly what the demonstrators have said, that they feel like, you know, this is how they can draw attention to something that they feel passionately about, that one of them called it, you know, a life or death issue. And so they say, you know, they're willing to risk their, you know, to put their bodies on the line. They're willing to risk criminal penalties to get their message out. Whether civil liability will change that equation, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, like, it really provides an interesting window into, okay, the First Amendment provides you the right to protest, but does it protect you from things that could happen after the fact? And there's an interesting case that's actually made its way through the courts all the way up to the high court recently that might shed light on some of this, right?
There is. I mean, it's somewhat different circumstances, but also on Monday, the Supreme Court declined to take up a case that was or a decision that's allowing. So they're going to allow a lawsuit to go forward that was brought by a police officer in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, who was hit in the head by a rock or piece of concrete during a Black Lives Matter demonstration, and I think it was 2016. And the person who threw the rock has never been identified. So the officer instead sued an activist who he alleges was the organizer of the march, saying that this activist should have known that the march could turn violent, and therefore he was negligent and should be responsible for the police officer's injuries.
Well, now this is a fascinating legal discussion. So the Supreme Court says we're not taking this. In other words, the Fifth Circuit ruling stands, meaning that this police officer can sue the activist. I've got that right, right?
Yeah. I mean, and there's some other holdings since then that will come into play, so it may not be entirely straightforward. And there hasn't been a determination yet whether, you know, in fact, the activist will be held liable. But the sure. fact that the court has allowed this to proceed, I think, is a really interesting example of how people are turning to the courts for civil remedies for injuries related to protests.
Yeah, that's interesting because one could argue, I'm sure the lawyer defending the activist would say, you know, obviously you can allow people to protest peacefully. That's important. But so is important the protection of the idea of a protest. And to if something happens at an activist, you know, an organization that he or she organized peacefully and it gets out of hand, if that activist can later be held liable for something that happens that was maybe out of their control, that might have a chilling effect on the First Amendment and prevent people from showing up to peaceful protests for fear that something could get out of hand that was out of their control. I'm fascinated by that argument, Jenna.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly what the lawyers for the activist, whose name is DeRay McKesson, are saying, that that this will chill the First Amendment and people's right to, to demonstrate and to protest.
Yeah. I just want to bring it back then to the protests on Monday. Do we have any idea from this lawyer who is, proposing a class action lawsuit? Is he going to sue the organization, specific organizers, or is he not there yet?
He's looking at suing both the organizers and individual defendants. And he said that he's able to identify some of the defendants already, mainly through social media, because people have posted about it. And then some of the organizations, announced that they were sponsors of the protests. And then he also anticipates naming a bunch of John Doe defendants, but if the lawsuit moves forward, he can, through the discovery process, uncover more defendants by looking at, getting hold of the emails or text messages of the people who they have been able to identify so far. So he feels confident in being able to come up with, named defendants. Whether they have any money or not isn't entirely clear. But he said, they're not doing it for the money. The lawyer, Ted Frank, is part of the Hamilton Lincoln Law Institute, which is a nonprofit public interest law firm that's based in Washington, D.C., that says it stands for things like free markets and limited government.
Interesting. Jenna, anything else that I've missed that you think is interesting for our listeners to know about?
I mean, one thing that caught my attention is that there is a very long history of people blocking roads as part of, civil disobedience and protests. But one thing that's changed is the tactics that, in the 1980s, for example, during ACT UP protests, you might see the police just sort of dragging the people off and they're limp and they arrest them and it's cleared pretty quickly. But at least in San Francisco, the protesters were using something that law enforcement calls the sleeping dragon, where they put their arms inside PVC tubes and that are threaded with carriage bolts and connect themselves to the bolts and to stationary objects. So it takes forever to clear the people. So 7 or 8 people can block a road.
Mm. That's interesting. Yeah, if the tactics have changed. Yeah, and that we wondered the same thing here in Chicago. Like, why aren't these arrests happening quicker?
Yeah.
But I didn't know if they had the PVC pipe or the, what was it called, the dragon something again?
They call it the sleeping dragon. And a consultant I talked to, trains law enforcement in extracting people from these devices, said it's really quite difficult because you can't just cut through someone's arm.
Right.
You have to be very careful to have the right tools and the knowledge to be able to safely remove someone, but that it can take hours.
We've seen it with the glue on the hands too, as well.
And that too, yeah. So it's it means that it sort of multiplies the impact of a road closure in a way that maybe we didn't see, 25 years ago.
It's fascinating. I really am interested in to see where this ends up going, if anywhere. But Jenna Green, we appreciate your time. It was a great article, and you do great work at Reuters as a law contributor, columnist. That's the word I was looking for, Jenna. Thanks for your time, okay?
Thank you, John.
Oh, by the way, I wanted to give everyone a HLLI.org is the Hamilton Lincoln Law Institute. If you were stuck in traffic, they tweeted or X'd out this stuck in traffic in Chicago because of the protests. They want you to contact them. And Hamlink Law, HAMLINC Law, is their handle on social media. We'll post it on the website, too. Jenna, have a good one, okay?
Thanks so much. You too.